Phoenix, where I live, is a very seasonal town for musicians. We're releasing this episode in the summer, and for most professionals in town, performances have slowed to a trickle. I intentionally don't play nearly as much as I did 10 years ago. Check out episode 120, called Immunity to Change, for the story of why and how I decided to scale back how often I play. But there are still times when I choose to play a bit more. And that happened a few months ago. I was playing lots of different styles with lots of different groups all within a couple of weeks, which is really fun. And in this episode, we'll reflect on some of the things I noticed about playing music professionally and share 5 lessons that I think are critical for any kind of work.
But before that, this show is a free resource sponsored by the Humanizing Work Company, where we work with business leaders, product people, and teams to help them sustainably and effectively create outcomes that matter. Want your work to feel like it flows more smoothly with everyone engaged, aligned, and pulling in the same direction? Then visit the contact page on humanizingwork.com and schedule a conversation with us.
Okay, I don't have video from all of those gigs that I mentioned, but just to give everyone an idea of a pretty common mix of styles that I would play over that period of time, I did grab some recent video of me playing in an orchestra, a jazz big band, a salsa band, and a Latin jazz group. Richard, let's watch that video together, and I'll ask you what stands out to you. So, what did you notice as you watched the video?
The thing that was most striking to me was the body language of the musicians, which kind of seemed to match the formality of the music. Like, the orchestra and the choir were engaged with the music, but in a serious, formal way. The big band players were less stiff, like you see a sax player smiling and nodding at another sax player, but it was still clearly a more ordered style overall. You're playing what's in your charts, and you're wearing suits to do it. In the salsa band, the musicians are all grooving and appreciating the music, and the interaction between the band members and the audience seems to be a key part of the experience. And then finally, I got the sense with the Latin jazz group that everybody was really present and engaged, listening and responding to the music. And the sheet music seems way less important in that setting. It actually felt like the five of you were creating something new together.
Yeah, and as a musician yourself, I'm sure you're well aware of what that feels like when everyone's present and interacting in that way. It's such a cool feeling being in collective flow with others. I've been fortunate to spend a good portion of my life playing music, first as a full-time job, and then more recently on nights and weekends while helping organizations improve as my day job. I've often reflected on what the two worlds, music and business, can learn from each other. We did one full-length episode about the similarities between a jazz group and a team way back in episode 7. And today, we'd like to share 5 lessons from the world of music that we think could make a big difference for anybody looking to be more successful at work. So, the first lesson is that it's about the hang as much as musical skill. In the music world, we spend more time together offstage than we do on it. We're setting up, we're rehearsing, we're communicating details before a gig, hanging out before and after sets. It all adds up. And musicians that are easy to get along with, easy to communicate with, and make a positive social contribution, we call those musicians a good hang. Like we would say, yeah, Richard's a good hang. You should call Richard. And they're really the first call, sometimes before more skilled musicians that are harder to get along with. I think being a good teammate's the same. Be easy to get along with, communicate with, and make a positive social contribution to your team. It amplifies your skills and makes your team that much more successful.
Yeah, and it's important not to confuse being a good hang with having to be friends with everybody on your team. I can think of a lot of people I've been in music groups with who are definitely a good hang. I enjoy my time with them during setup and teardown and while we're playing, but we never go have a beer or something outside the gig, and that's fine. It's the same at work. Being a good hang means it's pleasant to do the work and all the stuff around the work with you on the team. And I found that that's a characteristic you can often cultivate just by being aware of it. Ask yourself, and then pay attention, apart from just doing my job, is it a better experience to be part of this team because I'm on it?
All right, on to lesson two, which is this: prepare well, then be present in the moment. As musicians, we spend decades in the practice room drilling scales, arpeggios, articulations, all those things, so that translating the notes from the page, or our imagination if we're improvising, to the audience is muscle memory. It requires little or no conscious effort. And then when we take the stage, we can be fully present in the moment, the music and the space with that listener. This is the difference between a good technician and someone that can really transport the audience to some shared emotional state.
There was an epic example of that that Ben Zander talks about in his book, Leading from Any Chair. And I'll just read that bit from the book. He writes, "The legendary Kolisch Quartet had the singular distinction of playing its entire repertoire from memory. The alertness, presence, and attention required of the players in every performance is hard to fathom, but in one concert, an event occurred that surpassed their ordinary brinksmanship. In the middle of the slow movement of Beethoven's Opus 95 string quartet, just before his big solo, violist Eugene Lenner suddenly had an inexplicable memory lapse, in a place where his memory had never failed him before. He literally blacked out. But the audience heard Opus 95 as it was meant to be played, the viola solo sounding in all its richness. Even the first violinist, Rudolf Kolisch, and the cellist, Bernhard Heifetz, both with their eyes closed and deeply absorbed in the music, were unaware that Lenner had dropped out. The second violinist, Felix Kuhner, was playing Lenner's melody, coming in without missing a beat at the viola's designated entrance, the notes perfectly in tune and voiced like a viola on an instrument tuned a fifth higher. Lenner was completely stunned, and offstage after the performance asked Kuhner how he could have possibly known to play. Kuhner answered with a shrug, "I could see that your third finger was poised over the wrong string, so I knew you must have forgotten what came next."
I get goosebumps hearing that story. Talk about being present in the moment. I'm curious what in our listeners' work would benefit from skill drill to the point of muscle memory, so that you can be that present in the meeting, on the task, or in a presentation.
I think it can be useful to consider both sides of that. I've seen people who are really skilled in what they do at work, but kind of phone it in day to day. And they'd benefit from focusing on presence and engagement, which would probably start by building a strong connection to the purpose of their work. On the other hand, I've seen plenty of people who are highly engaged in the problems they're solving, but who never take the time to sharpen their skills. They're present, but they'd benefit from building up their skills to better contribute to the outcomes they care about.
On to lesson three, which is this: great listening matters as much as great playing, and it seems to be much rarer. In that introduction video, I'm playing in lots of different groups, which is very common for a freelance musician. With so much variety, of course, there are a range of experiences from, I kind of wish I'd turned this one down, to, wow, that was transcendent. My enjoyment and the audience's is almost always directly impacted by one key factor on the stage: were the other musicians listening? In groups where everyone is just playing their part, getting through the performance, the music is usually professional but uninspiring. On the other hand, in groups where everyone's locked in, listening to each other, it's like a different form of art. There's give and take, a conversation, and new things emerge that we couldn't have planned.
In work, this is at least as true. Most of us are listening just enough to start formulating what we'll say next. But instead, stay curious about what others are saying and trying to say without worrying about how you'll respond. That curiosity and active listening changes something in the conversation and deepens safety, and it opens more options.
All right, lesson four is that great teams improvise well. Now, not every genre of music involves improvisation. Several of the ones that we demonstrated here do. But even in styles where performing what's on the page is expected, the ability to improvise in the moment is critical. In fact, in the first clip from that video, I'm playing in an orchestra that was part of a very large multimedia performance. And about halfway through the overall music, there's a section where the orchestra has timed some underscore to a video of a speaker who's delivering a short inspirational message. We'd rehearsed the timing of that underscore section so that right as the video ends, the choir comes in and performs a section that quotes that inspirational message. We had what's called a safety built in, where we could repeat a few measures if the adrenaline of a live performance meant we were slightly ahead of the planned timing. And so we started that section, and apparently the guy in the booth that was supposed to push play on the video got his sections a little mixed up. He didn't realize we were at that point in the music, so we started playing, and no video started. And we got all the way to that repeated section, and the conductor wasn't sure exactly what to do. So she gave a signal to restart the piece, hoping the video guy would realize what happened. But not everyone saw the cue. Kind of train wreck potential here, right? Fortunately, a few of the section leaders in the orchestra helped everyone realize what was happening, and using hand signals, we got everyone back in sync. And crisis was averted, and the performance continued without a hitch from there. Even if your work team doesn't need to improvise on a regular basis, for example, if your team is built to deliver predictable, high-quality work, sometimes things happen, and you need to improvise. The ability to jump in and come up with a creative solution to an unexpected problem is a pretty important capability, regardless of the type of work.
And I think people often think of improvisation as creating some totally new thing, like a solo that's never been played before. But a lot of times, practical improvisation is simply being prepared and present enough to respond to whatever emerges. Sometimes that's creating something new. A lot of times that's just solving a problem that pops up.
That's right. Okay, finally, lesson five is that different styles appropriately use different structures. Again, in that opening video, I was playing four very different styles of music: classical music, big band music, salsa music, and Latin jazz. And each of these genres has a different set of expectations and very different cultures. The classical music is written out note for note, and the players are expected to be able to read exactly what's written with minimal room for interpretation. It's a very formal style of music. A great outcome for classical music is one that is stylistically true to what the composer intended. The big band genre has large sections of music that are written out, but a much wider range of interpreted license for the performers. Big bands have four sub-teams, what we call sections. There's trumpets, trombones, saxes, and the rhythm section. And each of those sections has their own leader, or as we call it, lead player. And those lead players set the stylistic interpretation of the music. The section players are then expected to listen closely, be present, and match the lead players. And then the lead players listen to the lead trumpet or the lead alto sax, depending on who's playing the melody at that point, to get the overall style for the band. So there's a hierarchy, but lots of freedom within it. Interspersed with those written sections of music are improvised jazz that has much more freedom for the soloist. A great outcome in big band music is for the band to be fully in sync with each other, or as we would say in the big band world, they're really swinging. The salsa band has some similarities to the big band. There are written sections, lots of written sections, and a little bit of improvisation. But the style and outcome are quite different from a big band. Salsa music is popular Latin American dance music. So a good outcome is that the dancers and the band have a good energy between them. And then finally, the Latin jazz group has the most freedom of the ones that we showed here. There's a very light structure within which the whole band is improvising, as you pointed out, Richard. Not much going on with the sheet music there. Any individual musician could take a live performance in a different direction than anyone had planned, and that would be viewed as a good thing. A good outcome in an improvising jazz group like that is that we collectively create something that was original and innovative. So different styles have different structures and expectations, and that's okay. Maybe the type of work you do requires following detailed checklists to reliably get high-quality results over and over again. Or maybe you're on a team trying to create an innovative product or service the world's never seen before. Those two teams need really different structures, rules, incentives, and agreements. There's no one-size-all process for every kind of work.
I know there's a lot of musicians in our audience, so I'm curious what resonated with you in the lessons we shared, as well as what other connections you've seen between music and your work. Comment on YouTube or LinkedIn and share your thoughts. Thanks for tuning in.